From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter with this local and state news update. A group of Alaskans has applied to hold a citizen initiative to move legislative sessions from Juneau to Anchorage. The initiative would also bypass a law that requires the state to seek voters' approval before incurring the costs of relocating the legislature. It's the latest in a long series of attempts to move at least some of the capital's functions away from Juneau. So far, unsuccessfully. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Anchorage resident David Bronson is one of the three sponsors.
We need more people in Alaska with access to their legislators during session. And that's Anchorage.
Attempts to move the capital have failed due at least in part to the cost. There has been just one previous initiative to just move the legislature to Matanuska-Susitna Borough in 2002. It failed by a margin of more than 2-1. State law requires that the public vote on whether to pay any cost for moving the legislature or the capital. The cost would be covered by a bond that would be paid over 12 years. Bronson says the public should know the costs of any move, but he says it would actually save money by lowering the travel and lodging costs for lawmakers. And he says the initiative would change the law that requires that voters be informed of the cost.
That's a very complex, expensive process. Okay, we are moving to change that statutory language as well as move the legislature. It's a two-part thing.
The initiative will require more than 28,000 signatures. Bronson declines to say if the sponsors have hired someone to collect the signatures, but he does say there are people who would gather signatures who have guaranteed they'll reach the required number. Legislative leaders are skeptical. Senate President Kathy Geisel, an Anchorage Republican, says she'll be interested in how Alaskans respond to the cost.
Moving the session to Anchorage would be a logistics challenge. Finding a location for this number of offices and these kinds of legislative sessions. So at this point, as difficult as it is for all of us to be away from home, this is where the job is today.
House Speaker Bryce Edgman, a Dillingham Democrat, opposes the initiative. He says the legislature is established in Juneau and the costs of a move would add up.
When you look at the costs involved of moving many staff, the sound equipment, the fact that we have voting boards down here already established in the House and Senate chambers, I think it's less efficient to meet away from the Capitol.
The Division of Elections has until April 8th to review the application to ensure it complies with the state law governing initiatives. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Most of Southeast Alaska is now in a drought. The panhandle's been blessed with a long spell of blue skies. But as Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, fish hatcheries see a dark side to all this sunshine.
I'm inside Douglas Island, Pink and Chum's largest salmon hatchery. In Juneau, everyone knows it as Dipak. I'm with Brock Meredith. He's the operations manager here.
When this facility is full, each one of these stacks of incubators have got about a million fry in them. This place sounds like Niagara Falls.
Not quite Niagara Falls. But this hatchery does use a lot of water. Right now, at least 6,000 gallons run through the plant every minute. And that can more than double in the summer. But water can't and shouldn't be taken for granted. Salmon fry need lots of cold, fresh water to thrive. But with warmer water flowing down from the reservoirs, this year Dipak had to move the juvenile fish out to colder salt water much earlier than ever before.
A lot of unknowns putting fish out this early. It was a little bit scary. What kind of marine environment were they going to be encountering when we put them in the net pens?
Other hatcheries in Southeast Alaska are also watching for rain clouds. At Crystal Lake near Petersburg, hatchery manager Lauren Thompson said Wednesday they're counting down how many days of water are left in the lake.
Yeah, 50 days is kind of looks like the end of the road for us, you know, so hopefully something happens in between now and then.
If it doesn't, they'll have to consider how to relocate more than a million juvenile king and coho salmon.
We don't want to panic and, you know, we do something like that and it's going to be disruptive to the whole operation and to the fish as well. So hopefully we can just continue with business as usual.
Scientists say the drought now consuming nearly all of Southeast Alaska has been a slow burn.
This is not something that just happened overnight. This is a long duration event that's been going on for 2 to 3 years now.
Aaron Jacobs is the National Weather Service's lead hydrologist in Juneau. there's been little rainfall over what's been historically the wettest months.
Everyone loved it, you know? Everyone's like hooting, hollering, you know? You can't, like, why? Oh, my God. Like, I'm usually in my house and trying to get away from the weather, but it was nice and sunny and dry. And so you didn't really think about it too much.
But after several years of these patterns, lakes and reservoirs haven't been able to recover.
You have two of your wettest months well below normal. And this is coming after a couple years of below normal precipitation on the whole. And when you have these couple events combined as a long term, you start seeing impacts from it.
Getting the attention of federal drought monitors has been challenging. This year, the hardest hit areas in the lower panhandle still reported about 100 inches of rain.
That sounds a lot for someone coming from Utah, but when their normal is 140 inches, well, that lack of 40 inches has a big impact on their operations from their hydropower to their drinking water.
Brad Rippey is a D.C.-based meteorologist with the Department of Agriculture. He's part of the U.S. Drought Monitor that keeps tabs on conditions across the nation. Many of the monitor's short-term indicators are based on farm conditions, such as soil moisture or even how green the foliage is. A team from the Nebraska-based National Drought Mitigation Center plans to visit Juneau this spring.
Because we know that some of the traditional drought indicators do fall apart when you're looking at different climates than what we're used to in the continental United States.
Well, let's walk through here.
Meanwhile, at the hatchery, Brock Meredith worries about sustained warmer weather. DIPAC is investing $1 million towards a cooling system to chill its water because of low snowpack. The hatchery is being forced to rethink its basic operations, he says, all because of climate change.
I won't go into the elephant in the room as to whether it's human caused or, you know, in part or in full, but the fact is it's happening, and it's right in front of our faces here in Alaska.
But it's a conversation that state and federal policymakers are elected to have.
I'm saddened when I read that the new governor has nixed the climate change task force in the state of Alaska. We are the canary in the coal mine for the, at least for the for North America, and probably these hatcheries are even more of a canary in the coal mine. I mean, you can definitely see it. It's right in front of your face.
The outlook for Southeast Alaska in March remains cold and clear, with no rain in the extended forecast. That's caused the National Drought Monitor to upgrade most of Southeast Alaska to moderate to severe drought. Depleted reservoirs at hydroelectric plants means communities can expect to burn more diesel to generate power. And it's introducing a phrase not often heard here, water conservation. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
A bill signed in the U.S. Senate today would force the Environmental Protection Agency to classify the pollutants known as PFAS as hazardous under the Superfund cleanup law. PFAS are a class of chemicals used in firefighting foam, nonstick pans, and certain types of rain gear. The chemicals have been discovered in water wells in more than a dozen Alaska communities. PFAS are associated with hormone interference and a higher risk of cancer, but research on the health effects is sparse. The bipartisan bill would make polluted sites eligible for Superfund cleanup money and allow the government to hold polluters financially responsible. Senator Lisa Murkowski is one of 20 co-sponsors. PFAS are still in use today. They add water and stain resistance to fabrics and even food packaging. Manufacturers have agreed to stop using two types of them, but some are also phasing them out entirely, and others are switching to forms of PFAS they consider safer. The Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race kicks off this weekend. The event begins Saturday with a short, fan-friendly run in Anchorage. The competition portion of the race starts Sunday in Willow, north of Anchorage. The 52-team field includes defending champion Jor Olsom of Norway, three four-time winners, and a three-time champion. The expected top prize is $50,000, the same amount as last year, but more than $20,000 below the top prize in 2017. This year's race comes on the heels of two difficult years for organizers that included a dog doping scandal, the loss of big-name sponsors, and escalating pressure from animal activists over multiple dog deaths over the years. And we have a correction to a story that ran yesterday about shore power in Juneau. The proposal to use $250,000 in marine passenger fee revenue to study expanding shore power infrastructure came from city manager Rory Watt, not the Juneau Commission on Sustainability. And taking a quick look at weather, it's currently 42 degrees and sunny with a few clouds at Juneau International Airport. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 29, and a very good chance to see the aurora. That's the latest from the KTOO Newsroom. For more local and state news, go to ktoo.org. I'm Adeline Baxter.